Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
We have an email here from one of our own teachers, actually, at LSAT Demon, Matthew Palmer. Thanks for sending this in, Matthew.
Yeah, brand new teacher, killing it so far on his reviews. And he writes in to say, just wanted to provide some extra background as I am in a similar situation to the student who emailed in for today's daily episode. So this is a follow-up. Academic renewal in California is defined by statute. It says every community college must have this program and it must maintain the accurate record despite having this program. Local community colleges could not change it without violating state law. Maybe students could change to retroactive withdrawal, but they're not allowed to remove grades from the record. This is at least in California. All renewal does is note those grades have been renewed and remove them from the community college's GPA calculation. Most community colleges even have in their fine print that they cannot guarantee that other institutions will honor this academic renewal. They're not going to care about a post on social media saying they are a fraud, as every college in the state is bound by the same law. So Matthew there is busting me for, you know, I was saying we had someone email us a previous poor applicant who had done academic renewal and then discovered that the academic renewal was not being honored by the LSAC GPA calculation.
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, I mean, I guess the thing to do if you care about this and you want to get it changed, you've got to petition LSAC to change their policy to start honoring academic renewal. But the thing is, you know, LSAC essentially is all of the law schools, right? They're a member organization of all of the law schools. And so for whatever reason, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, right? Because law schools, like, they're all about restorative justice and all that shit. And they're all about, like, second chances. And so I feel like academic renewal totally ought to be honored in law school applications. Because why not? Who gives a shit that you did poorly at community college and then you got your shit together and did academic renewal and then presumably went on to a four-year institution and killed it there? Why the fuck would they be holding you, you know, oh, no, the academic record shows that you did poorly before you did well, so we have to punish you forever based on that. I mean, it does seem like a thing that should change if academic renewal is even going to exist, because otherwise, then what is academic renewal?
It's only for people who graduate from community college and then need to use their grades for a job then, I guess.
Yeah.
Or schools, or I guess under other four-year schools that honor that. It has some limited purpose, but.
Yeah. Matthew continues and says, LSAC also says that they will take renewed grades if they show up on record, even if they are noted with the review symbol and excluded from the school's calculation. So it's just, that's LSAC policy, and academic renewal is just not going to work for law school admissions because of that. We have a link here to the statute, apparently, from California. We can figure out how to link that into the show notes. Matthew emailed again following up and said, in California, if you are applying to graduate school, then yeah, it's a scam. But most undergraduate institutions that a community college student would transfer to will honor the academic renewal. I might not have gotten into UCLA and UC Berkeley without it. And again, that's from Matthew. So thank you, Matthew, for correcting the record and setting us straight with our understanding of academic renewal. It really is a policy that needs to get changed at the LSAC and, you know, just all law schools level.
Well, it's tough. I mean, LSAC may be doing it because of consistency. Some states don't even have academic renewal. So how do you level the playing field?
If law school admissions is a national thing, I suppose individual law schools, if they didn't care about the 509 data and they didn't care so much about the rankings an individual law school could be like, well, we'll recalculate your GPA because our state has academic renewal. That might be worth writing an addendum, actually, if you're applying to law school in a state with academic renewal. I could see how it might be worth just pointing that out to the schools, like, hey, we're in a state that has academic renewal, and I did academic renewal, and that's not reflected in my LSAC GPA.
At the very least, yeah, a short addendum, one sentence.
One sentence. I mean, don't go on like
recalculated GPA without
right.
Honoring the academic renewal would be X. Period. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like worthwhile to point out. Now, again, if the school is just solely there for the rankings, then they're not going to care anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
At least you got their mind focused on a different number for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. You can potentially get somebody to anchor on some higher number, you know, just throw in there. My GPA would be 3.9 if the academic renewal was honored.
Yep.
Ryan says, Dear LSAT Demon, hello. I appreciate all your work on helping people elevate their LSAT scores. I also enjoy listening to your podcast from time to time. I do not know if you remember, but I have previously sent an email asking for some tips on improving my LR. Since then, I have made some improvements, and now I'm able to finish the LR section on time with around 2 to 4 questions incorrect on average. However, recently, I have felt that my scores are plateauing as I am struggling to further improve my score. Listening to great things about the LSAT Demon study programs, I've decided to try a month of Demon as well, but I'm still unable to see any improvements. So what would be the best way to utilize the Demon to improve my score and ultimately reach a level of scoring on average perfect on LR? Perfect on average, you say. Okay, so perfect always.
That's how that works.
Well, never miss a question. Currently, for LR only, from Monday to Friday, I take a timed section with review and 2 hours of drilling. On Saturday, I take a full practice test and review. Sunday, I give my brain some time to rest. Given my current study schedule, how can I change my study method to improve my score and ultimately reach a level of perfection? Thank you for your time and also for making my LSAT journey less burdensome. From Ryan.
Ryan, you're studying too much. You're doing a time section, reviewing it, and then you're doing 2 hours of drilling daily? Am I understanding that correctly? That's for LR only. So then what are you doing on top of that for logic games and reading comp? I'd much rather you do fewer questions, drill, because the drilling algorithm is going to give you harder questions given how well you're doing, and then you can start asking questions to the ask team about those questions. I'd rather you do 10 questions and really understand them than do how many? Man, how many is Ryan doing?
You're reinforcing your plateau. You're like, because so Ryan, I'm not confident that you should be actually finishing these sections. You seem to think that that's a good thing that you're finishing, but you're missing 2 to 4 questions. What if you didn't do the last one or two?
Yeah, you got all of them right. Those other ones right. Yeah, exactly.
Up till then, because you're dropping some points along the way. And if you're doing that, if we take you at your word, you're literally doing 5 sections of LR a week and just consistently getting 2 to 4 wrong. That's a hell of a lot of mistakes you're making every week. You should eventually stop making those mistakes. So are you really getting anything out of this doing a section and then you're reviewing it? But like, is anything actually going in?
Well, I want to double down on something you said briefly. And that is, you said you're reinforcing something, this plateau or these bad habits.
You're reinforcing your bad behavior. Like you're reinforcing that bad score.
Absolutely. So think about this, Ryan, when you're doing a section, if you skip the last 2 questions or 1 question, I don't know what it will be, but whatever, you just focus on getting every single question that you do right, well, then that's the habit you're going to start developing. Right now, you're developing the habit of kind of skimping on 2 or 3 of these questions so you can finish, and that's not the skill you want to develop.
Yeah, you're trying to be literally perfect on the section. Instead, you need to try to be perfect on the questions you attempt.
Yep.
Because, by the way, you can't be perfect on the section without being perfect on the questions you attempt.
But you can be perfect on the questions you attempt without being perfect on the section, but eventually you will become perfect on the section.
The only way you get perfect on the section is you don't miss any. And right now you're missing 2 to 4. And I think it has to do with your thinking about the section. You're going a little bit too fast. And so that causes you to drop some questions. By the way, you're probably getting lucky on another 2 to 4 questions where it was a 50-50 and you guessed right. And then these other 50-50s you guessed wrong. And so you're just not doing the test in a serious enough, lawyerly enough way. And you've got to give up on the time for a while. And just, like, I'm not saying don't time yourself, but just don't try to finish the section. Instead, don't pick answers unless you know they're right.
And do less work, but better work. I mean, yeah. I've used this analogy way too many times, but imagine someone going to the gym for 4 hours or 3 hours a day.
Yeah,
it's like, just go there, hit some really hard weights, and then go home. Stop with this. Oh, jam, jam, jam. It's like, you're acting like an attorney in the sense that you are setting a goal of one time section with review plus 2 hours of drilling, and you're hitting that goal, but that's not the right goal.
Eric, we're going to need that drop from Ben. Just go there, hit some really hard weights, and then go home. I want that. I want that to be like my ringtone. All right. That's excellent. Thank you, Ryan, for writing in.
Cool.
We have an email here from Charlie.
Hey, Ben and Nathan. Thanks for all the help you guys provide. Exclamation point. I have a lot to ask, so I'll keep things short. Background. I'm 18 years old and have taken one practice LSAT. I got a score of 147, and I'm looking to reach the 170s by the end of my undergrad. Okay. My questions for you. One, am I too far ahead of myself? My family thinks I should broaden my horizons, but I feel I want to go to law school. What do you think? I have no idea.
I think you should explore your options. You're 18. You're like just starting school.
Yeah.
Why lock yourself in? Law school will always be there as long as, you know, get good grades, Charlie.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
take classes grades that excite you and then just kick ass, excel in every single one of those classes. I think it's too soon for you to be worrying about the LSAT.
I agree with you, Nathan. I actually glossed over. I am 18 years old. Okay. Wow. That's really far ahead. You're going to probably take some econ class or some chemistry class or some physics class or who knows what and be like, wow, this is fascinating.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are you doing in college? You know, don't squander your undergraduate education on this single-minded pursuit of law school. Just get good grades, but take whatever you want to take, major in whatever you want to major in, explore around, don't let LSAT studying interfere with your grades. And I think you're wasting energy thinking about law school right now.
Yeah. Okay, so we have more questions about this process. 2, how much does the ranking of my undergrad university, which happens to be Penn State, affect my chances of getting into a T14 law school? All things equal, yeah, a more competitive school is going to help you, but it's such a small factor, so small, that don't think about it at all. It's not, I would say it's actually not a factor.
Also, what difference does it make? You're already there at Penn State. If you were asking us, where should I go to college? Then we might have a different answer. Probably not, though. But you're already there. You're at Penn State. So get straight A's. And then after you're getting straight A's, if you want to start studying for the LSAT, I mean, look, straight A's and a kick-ass LSAT will get it done at any school. But yeah, you're just worrying about stuff that's not at all controllable by you because you're already enrolled at Penn State.
Yeah. 3, how can I study to get into the 170 plus range in the next 3 years? First, get good grades. But if you do study, I would suggest starting with Demon Free at a minimum.
Yeah, just don't do it if you're not getting straight A's. I mean, you can study with us in the summers or you can study with us part time. At lsatdemon.com. It's really just one question at a time. That's how you study. You just drill, you just do a question. And then if you struggle with it, you watch video explanations, you read written explanations, you email our team via the ask button. You get the help you need until you feel that click. That's what we're all about, is just get those clicks. Make it make sense.
Yep.
But you don't need to be making a 3-year study plan for this. You need to be looking at your undergraduate experience.
Yeah. Four, are my majors, majors? You have two majors. Okay. Political science and women's studies going to look bad compared to STEM majors, even if I were to get into the 170 range and a high GPA?
Just get straight A's no matter what, Charlie. Drop and one of those majors if you're not going to get straight A's.
Well, just drop one of the majors, period. I don't understand why. What are you doing two majors for? I don't understand the value of that.
Yeah, it doesn't help. I mean, hopefully you're just doing it incidentally, but the double major isn't going to impress anybody for law school admissions. And, you know, like, you'd rather have a 4.0 with one major than a 3.9 and two majors.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, this, like, Charlie, you got to stop comparing yourself to people who went to other schools, to people who have other majors. You're not a STEM major. If you were a STEM major, you'd be a STEM major. You're not a STEM major. You're just like the vast majority of other law school applicants studying political science and women's studies and criminal justice and English and all the other things that future lawyers tend to study. STEM would certainly be a feather in your cap, but that's so rare in law school applications. And anyway, it's not you. If you loved math, you would probably be doing STEM. I mean, if you love math, you should be doing STEM.
Yeah.
Any last words for Charlie?
Nope. Thanks for writing in. Good luck.
I think your parents are right, Charlie. I think you're jumping the gun here by locking in to law school. Even if you are, like, on the law school path, you don't need to be thinking about law school admissions right now. You need to be just killing it in every class you take.
Absolutely. That's a rare one. We're usually fighting against parental dogma that's incorrect.
Yeah, parents who think that you should apply to law school right now.
Yeah.
But this time I think we're agreeing with your folks that maybe it's a little too soon to be just only going down that one path.
This email is from Jacob.
Hi, my name is Jacob. I've been studying for the LSAT for about 1.5 months now. I was introduced to LSAT Demon Daily about 3 weeks ago from a friend of mine and have been a big fan thus far. I listen to your podcasts religiously on my commutes. My question is, how do I get over the hump between high score and perfect score in sections? My initial diagnostic was a 161. I have been scoring in the 168 to 173 range for my last 10 tests. However, I can't stop making small mistakes in all three of the sections. My goal is a 175 plus, which I think it should be given your diagnostic of 161. That's an excellent diagnostic. I usually find myself split between two very attractive answer choices.
Okay.
I feel that I could make an argument for both answer choices most of the time. Okay. Well, we know your problem, Jacob.
You're not reading carefully enough.
Yep.
You're not thinking about the argument carefully enough, and you're not thinking about the answer choices carefully enough, or you're probably actually making an argument for an answer choice that's not even on the page.
Yep. Jacob continues, I know this can't be the case, as there has to be one absolutely correct answer on the LSAT. This happens often for all reading comp questions and for LR questions that ask what part of the argument is X or what is the author's method of reasoning. Why do you think he's so narrowing it down to two generally is because you don't predict the answers. And so then you get, like, sucked into these answer choices that Jacob is calling attractive, but that we know are conclusively wrong if you read every word.
Yeah, and Jacob seems to start to know that.
He gets that, but then he's like, I feel that I could make an argument for both answer choices most of the time. And you just couldn't, Jacob. If you tried that with Ben, Ben would be like, what now? No, that's not what that says. or what? How does that make sense? That's not what that means. Or, huh? That's not what the question asked you. Or something, but there's just a reason why it's wrong. And if you're always narrowing it down to two, I think you're just being too passive. You need to be looking for reasons why answers are wrong, not looking for reasons why answers are right. What do you think, though, about this specific complaint that it's happening on reading comp and then reasoning questions on LR?
Well, let's start with the reasoning questions in LR, because that's pretty easy. What's happening in those answer choices is they're giving you somewhat abstract descriptions of what's happening in the passage. And as you're reading those abstract descriptions, you're not treating them literally enough. You're reading them and then you're imbuing them with meaning that's not there. You need to take them literally. You need to say, does this absolutely have to be true? Word by word.
There's a reason why that other answer is just conclusively wrong. Probably because it's too strong. And I think that that's probably the case for most of your reading comprehension woes as well. There's going to be something
These are all must be true questions. Sorry, I mean, cut you off. But yeah,
no, that's absolutely
right.
That's
what we're talking to. Yeah.
We have one brain now. It's all must be true questions on reading comp. And certainly these reasoning questions in LR are of the must be true variety.
Yep.
And so the reason why the wrong answer is wrong is because you can't prove it. The reason why the right answer is right is because you can prove it. And there's something in that wrong answer that probably is too specific or too broad or just something different that isn't in the evidence.
Yeah.
Jacob, if you're still with us, if you're still studying, which I hope you are, unless you've already gotten your 175 plus, you just need to be, you know, you can't fight with the test. So you're saying two things that can't both be true, right? You're saying, I feel that I could make an argument for both answer choices, but I understand that there has to be one absolutely correct answer. So your problem is that you're making an argument for answers. And on these types of questions, you shouldn't be helping the answers at all. You shouldn't be making an argument for the answer. You should be looking for arguments against answers.
Yeah. Why is that answer bad? Why is that answer bad? You may eliminate all five, but then you just find the least bad answer.
Yep.
I wanted to say one other thing. It says, however, I can't stop making small mistakes in all three of the sections. As someone you started with a 161, you're already in a very good range. I think you have obviously some good understanding of this test. My fear, I don't know if this is what you're doing, but my fear is that you're looking at the section as a whole. And I think that every time you do a question, you need to think about that question. Your job is to do that question and think about nothing else. I think you have the ability to kill these answers, to kill these questions, if you focus on them one at a time. I think you're much less likely to make small mistakes.
Yep. You're pursuing that 175 instead of pursuing one question.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, then you skate the surface sometimes and you're like, well, I mean, they're both good. It's maybe probably this one. And instead you need to take your time there to just rule out conclusively the wrong answer. Well, the 161 diagnostic, I do think that you can get to perfection on maybe every section.
Yeah, really close to it. Don't worry about getting there, but I think you can. Yeah. This email is from Shameen?
I would say Shameen, probably. Hi, Ben and Nathan. I took the May 2022 LSAT and did not score great because it was in the midst of a particularly tough month for me, and I know I was unable to reach my potential due to some personal circumstances that are thankfully no longer at play. I know I can get a stronger score, so I'm currently preparing to retake the LSAT, but unfortunately in Dubai, where I live, the LSAT is not administered frequently enough, not as frequently as it is in the States. My only options to take the exam are either October 2022 or January 2023. My gut says, well, you should probably take both, because you're allowed to take it three times in one cycle and five times if you cross cycles, and law schools only care about your highest score. So especially when you have fewer opportunities to take the test, you should probably be planning on taking it when it's offered. Anyway, sure. Goes on and says, I don't think I'd be able to perform my best as soon as October, which leaves me the only option being the January LSAT. My concern is that the January exam might be cutting it too close to application deadlines. I can see Ben shaking his head, but that's what I'm hoping to get some advice on.
Yeah, hold up. Just step back for a half second. That means you're thinking about taking it in October and then applying this cycle. That's already late. Taking it in January is way too late. So don't be thinking of these tests as opportunities to apply this cycle. You're already past that. So,
Shameen, even if you were only writing about the October test and you acknowledge that you're probably not going to do your best as soon as October, which, by the way, that means you shouldn't have even taken it in May. I mean, but that's whatever. That's water under the bridge. Don't take October if your practice tests don't indicate that you're ready. And even if you do take October, don't apply this cycle. You are putting yourself at a disadvantage of getting into better schools. You're also putting yourself at a disadvantage of getting scholarships. That's not to say that it's impossible. If you read online, you're going to hear people saying, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. I applied in January and I got in, or I applied in January and I got a scholarship. Yeah, sure. There are exceptions to these rules. We're not saying that it's impossible to do it the other way. We're just saying that for your best chance at getting in and getting scholarships, and especially for the scholarships part, you should apply at the beginning of the cycle. Shameen, also, I mean, you're going to put yourself in a real pressure situation if you take only the January test with the intention of applying right away.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be freaking out about like, well, I've got to do it. This is the one. And it's so tragic because you then fail to like have the luxury that so many of our other students have, which is like, hey, I know that they only care about my highest score. So yeah, I'm taking it in October and then I'll take it again in January and then take it again sometime after that. And then, you know, when I apply in September, only the highest one of those is going to really matter.
Yeah.
But not if you do it this way. If you push it, then, you know, it's like all my eggs are in one basket. So now it's super pressure packed. Just don't do it that way. Thanks in advance. I love the video podcast and the LSAT Demon has been a big help. Being an international student applying for law schools in the US can feel quite isolating and there's less of a community feel. But the Demon has helped me tons so far in growing my confidence and feeling less alone. Thanks for all that you guys do. Best regards, Shameen. I think that our live classes are excellent for that part. The community part. And we have free live classes. LSAT.link/Nathan. If you want to come to my free classes that I do every other Thursday. But we constantly are putting out we have daily classes for live subscribers. And if you're studying for the LSAT in some far flung place, you can come to class with me, with Ben, with all of our other amazing teachers and a really super cool community of students.
Yeah, I do want to follow up with one thing here. Okay. I would say that so she took the test in May, right? So that cycle is passed and now she has 3 more tests in this cycle, which will end with the end at the end of July, right?
Yeah, before the August test.
Yeah, it looks like, and if I'm reading this wrong, then this won't work, but it looks like for the Middle East, you are going to have a test in October, as you said, January, April, and June. So if you're not ready for October, I would save your 3 options this cycle and look to January, April, and June.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the plan, Shameen. January, April, and June, and then apply in September of the next cycle. Looking at deadlines is just the last thing you should be doing. You should be applying early so that the schools have this feeding frenzy where they're all bidding for Shameen. If you apply near the deadline, you look like you're desperate. You know, they're less desperate. When you apply near the deadline, they maybe have already filled half of their class, or they've maybe given out, you know, millions of dollars in scholarships. because they're trying to snap up the students who applied at the beginning of the cycle. And you just don't want to play the game the way you're thinking about playing it at the deadlines. Just start over, do it next cycle.
Yeah.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.